Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
One of the many members of ESPN who was doing yeoman's work Thursday, Friday, Saturday for the draft coverage is Mike Tenenbaum, and he joins us now here on 98.7. Mike, excellent job, and we appreciate you joining us as always. And you and I have had a lot of discussion on this show, and then I sent you a direct message, which you very quickly replied to the other night, about Andrew Thomas and how much you really like him. You told us leading up to the draft that you are a big fan of Andrew Thomas. Now he's officially a member of the Giants, so Giants fans want to hear, what is it that separates him in your mind from the other offensive linemen in this draft, and how much do you like him?
Yeah, Dave, really for me it came down to, like, how is pro football being played in 2020, and specifically when you look at two of the better pass rushers he won again in against Florida. They had two guys get drafted in Grenard and Zuniga, and then at LSU, Clavion Chasen, who's a very good pass rusher, and you just watch him pass protect. I thought he did it well. I thought he did it naturally. I thought it was, when you look at his flexibility, short area quickness, arm length, I think his game has some flaws to it, and I think his similarities to Brickashaw Ferguson, who ironically was also drafted fourth overall, I think there's a lot of similarities in terms of not a great finisher. You're not going to get a lot of movement at the point of attack in the run game, but he can do what's most important, and I think from a Giant fan perspective, I think he immediately makes Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley better football players.
Mike T, when you look at the entirety of the New York Giants draft, I know there's a lot of people that love the Xavier McKinney pick early in that second round. How would you, I don't want to say grade because no one really knows that, but as a whole, how do you think the Giants did in the draft?
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, Rick, when you look at McKinney, I think there was just a ton of value there because a lot of people, myself included, thought he had a real chance to go much earlier than he did. Canley, I'm not really sure why he didn't. I think there may be some questions about, can he play, the deep area of the field and, his athleticism. So, that maybe is a little bit of a grade of incomplete. But, look, they lost, Landon Collins a couple of years ago. The other guy, Matt Peart, the tackle from UConn, let's see what he can do. He's a bigger body guy. I just love the fact that they're throwing resources at, the offensive line. And, Andrew Thomas, to me, will make those other four guys better. And, Pert may or may not start this year. But, those top three guys, you can see a role where – a vision where they can all contribute.
Mike T, if you're responsible for developing the plan as to how you're going to use Andrew Thomas early on, how would you go about it? Would you start him off at right tackle or would you put him at left?
Yeah, Chris, that's a great question. I was part of that firsthand in Miami where we drafted Laramie Tunsil, who's turned out to be a very good player. We actually put him at guard, and Laramie did not like that. He didn't want to play there. We had somebody, Brandon Albert, who was a good player. He was obviously at that point, close to the Enchris, but we put him at left guard and then kicked him out the next year to tackle. So, Solder was a guy that struggled, obviously. That's maybe the main reason why they, drafted Thomas. So, I would really start maybe even at left tackle because competition and let the best players play. And I don't know why we have to accommodate Solder based on what he's done.
Mike, when you look at the Giants offensive line, we've heard about this forever, hog mollies and how important it is to fix it. And Giants fans have been so angry and frustrated with the lack of offensive line over the last couple of years. Is it fixed? I mean, when you look at Zeitler, when you look at Hernandez, when you look at Thomas, when you look at Lemieux, when you look at the other guys they have at center and the kid they drafted from UConn, in your mind, is this thing finally fixed?
I think it's certainly heading in the right direction. You can't have enough of them. You want to be 7-8 deep. So it's markedly better. I'm a Hernandez guy. I know he's not the best athlete. Zeitler's still solid. They're putting a lot of resources at, between Fleming and Pert, you hope you have another guy there. And I will say this, when you have a left tackle that's dependable and reliable the way Andrew Thomas, barring something unforeseen, will be long-term, that gives you a lot of comfort because as a GM, it allows you to attack so many other things with one less thing to worry about. And candidly, like Eli Manning was a great example of that. You know, you could pencil in Eli Manning year after year, and that gave you a lot of comfort when you're running a franchise. So I'm not saying the line is perfect, but I do like the fact that they've thrown so many resources at it.
To be honest, Mike, Dave would kill for a four deep at this point. Mike T, couple parted question. First and foremost, were you a little caught off guard or concerned that Dave will slide into your DMs? That's the first part of the question. Second part of the question, as far as to kind of pivot to the Jets, were you surprised they went Becton over Wirfs, or did that make sense to you?
Yeah, well, you guys can DM me anytime. And in fact, you know, that's a great place for you to slide in that Starbucks gift card. So I know you've been trying to figure out how to get it to me. So DMing it, Rick, would be probably the most efficient way. So I know that's been something that's kept you up at night, and I want to get that worry off your plate.
You don't feel, Mike, like I crossed a line, right? You felt like it was well within our relationship that I can DM you the night of the NFL draft, right?
Yeah, I mean, I also think it's worthy of an iced venti soy chai latte, but you know, that's a story for another day. I digress. However, as it relates to Becton, you know, Becton's just one of these rare guys. Like, if you hit on him, I mean, the guy, you can't say enough. 364 pounds, and he ran a 5.1. There were certainly some questions about love of the game. Obviously, there was a little bump in the road there at the combine with the specimen. But, look, he should really, unless something, he's so athletic for that size. I just can't, he's such a high-floor player. I don't know how you could go wrong with him. Now, will he be elite? Will some guys edge him in terms of he does, you know, he's not going to be the quickest guy because he's so big. But, boy, I think he's such a high-floor guy. He's really intriguing. My only concern with Wirfs was I didn't think he finished great. And I thought for Iowa offensive lineman, I just thought there was more there given his athleticism. So if I was going to bet on one of the two, I probably would have taken Becton as well because I'm just so intrigued. And if you can get him on a off-season program where you're working on agility, a lot of ladder drills, just where you could just try to make his quickness better. I mean, you may have Jonathan Ogden, and if you do, you're turning a weakness of the Jets into a strength.
Mike T, I hate to bounce back and forth between the Jets and the Giants, but I wanted to ask you one more question about Big Blue. They've got to make a decision on whether or not they want to exercise the fifth-year options for Evan Engram and Jabril Peppers. For those respective players, what would your approach to that be? Would you exercise the option? Would you extend them? Or would you make them go into a prove-it year?
Yeah, that's a good question, Chris. I would definitely exercise it on Engram because he is such a weapon, and those guys are really hard to find. And look, Chris, you were a really good defensive lineman for a long time. Like, those tight ends of Mark Bavaro's, they just don't really exist much anymore. So really, can you find a tight end that's going to capture the edge? And Engram certainly isn't, but he can be productive in the passing game. As it relates to Peppers, I just think he's more of a closer to the line of scrimmage guy. And I would probably take more of a wait and see approach because, candidly, I want to make sure that him and, you know, to the extent you could put him and McKinney on the field at the same time, I just want to make sure that you have enough speed and range because Peppers to me is a good player when the field's condensed. When you have to put him out in the deep halves, I'm just worried would the ball be thrown over his head and over McKinney. So I would take a little bit more of a wait and see approach on him.
Our resident GM, Mike Tenenbaum, joining us here, 98.7 ESPN. So, you know, we've asked you about the first round pick with Becton over Wirfs and your thoughts there. How about as an overview on what the Jets did on the couple trades they made, on taking Mims, on adding to the offensive line, on only taking one receiver? What's your take on what the Jets did in the first draft run by Joe Douglas?
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. I've gotten a few predictions wrong, but it's funny. One of the ones I got right was I said, you know, there was going to be two buckets of players, one where it was going to be good players from big schools that are going to get overdrafted. And I kept talking about Damon Arnette. And Arnette got drafted in the first round, which I just didn't see that. I thought he played to like a 4-5-6. He's a good corner from Ohio State, but I thought really lacked high-end athleticism going the first round. And then I thought the player hurt more than anybody else in the entire draft process was Ashton Davis, the third-round pick of the Jets, because he was a guy that had, you know, good tape. He was a walk-on track background, and he was hurt. And he would have been a guy in a normal offseason where he would have had – you know, a big pro day, a lot of attendance there, and then he would have had probably 20 to 25, literally 20 to 25 visits of the 32 teams. So I think opportunistically, that was a great pick. Now, you could say, like, well, they're going to pay, you know, Jamal Adams a lot, and they took Marcus May in the second round back in 17. But if it allows May to graduate and now you don't have to pay him next year, I think there could be real value in that pick. So of all the picks I liked, I really like Becton for what we talked about. And I think if you hit on Davis, he's a high-ceiling guy, and he's really intriguing to me. And he also may make, believe it or not, Jamal Adams better, because if you let Adams play down low, you know, when you're in a single high safety and Davis plays to his athleticism, you really may have, like, an ideal tandem.
Yeah, but, Mike, I think for me as a Jets fan, my bigger concern is in a draft that had 36 wide receivers drafted, you only end up with one of them. At all concerning for you with the lack of weapons around Sam Darnold at this point?
I think when we look at that, Rick, you got to look a little bit from a bigger picture standpoint. Like, you know, for the Saints, they added a young quarterback in Jameis Winston. It just wasn't a draft choice. So, you know, the Jets did add Perryman, in fairness, and they did draft Min. So I look at, hey, they've added two. Now, I'm very concerned about a guy like Inouye just in terms of his durability. So they certainly could add another one at some point. But Mims is big. He can run. He's been productive. You know, the only thing that we did talk about this on the broadcast, which was I kept an eye on it from a standpoint. Matt Rhule at Carolina signed so many of his foreign players, ironically one of them being Robbie Anderson, who he coached at Temple. And maybe it means nothing, and I don't mean to say that it does, but I did note that they didn't draft Mims, and he was somebody that he did coach at Baylor now. You could say, like, well, they took all those defensive players and they didn't need a receiver. But that was something I was kind of keeping a close eye on. So, and one other point, Rick, I would make is of all the positions, you know, you can find receivers later in the spring and summer if necessary.
Mike T, one of the things that caught my eye about the Jets draft is that they used a fourth round pick on James Morgan, the quarterback from Florida International. I just wonder about what the plan, what the thinking behind that is, and what the Jets are going to do in terms of their backup quarterback situation going into 2020.
Yeah, you know, he's an interesting guy. A lot of teams were talking about him moving up boards late in the process. He's transferred. And, you know, right now they just have David Fales. So to the extent that Morgan can, we saw that quite a bit, you know, where Fromm was drafted in the fifth round up in Buffalo. They have Barkley behind him. Eason was drafted in Indy. He may compete. So it's just more competition. I think this, though, I'd be shocked. First round included, by the way. Maybe Burrow is the only exception where I don't see a lot of these guys playing in year one, because these quarterbacks have to move to a new city. They have to find an apartment, learn an offense, learn the people in the building, learn their teammates. And then, oh, by the way, you know, go get ready to play a game where the incumbents, you know, be it Sam Darnold in this case, or in Tua's case, someone like Ryan Fitzpatrick, or obviously Aaron Rodgers is going to start this year, Tyrod Taylor, those incumbent veterans have such a huge advantage. So I think we have to modify our collective expectations for quarterbacks drafted in 2020.
Okay, Mike T, so that being said, then, if a young quarterback that's just drafted is having to go through all of these different logistics and probably not going to be ready to play early on, I mean, don't you need to have another quarterback on that roster that's capable of stepping in if something happens to the starter?
Yes, I think that's totally fair. And, you know, to the extent that, you know, they feel confident about Fales, you know, that's certainly a possibility. And then, I don't know, you know, there's still a couple other veteran quarterbacks out there, and I guess we'll see how that plays out. But I think that's fair. Just in terms of, I think rookie quarterbacks this year are just really going to be behind the veterans.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. If I took, say, Baltimore off the table here, and you can't choose them as a team that had the best draft, because it seemed like they're the consensus of what people say, the team that had just a sensational draft, what one, or you can even go a couple of teams, had really good drafts, in your opinion?
I think a couple that really stood out to me, Dave, let's start with Minnesota. I thought Minnesota just did such a good job. When I thought, first of all, they still deserve so much credit. They really maximized the value of Stephon Diggs, and they had to come out of this with a couple of starters. They lost three corners. So in terms of getting Justin Jefferson, I liked him. I would have taken him over Jalen Reagor, who went right before with Philadelphia. I think he's a guy that can run routes, catch the ball, competitive. He was one of my favorite players in the draft. And then Jeff Gladney, very athletic corner from TCU. So when you could plug in two players that could come in and start right away, and then Ezra Cleveland is a very athletic tackle from Boise, who they got in the second round, it's not hard for me to think that they're going to have three starters pretty soon. And if you could get three starters out of any draft, that's a really good job. And then the other one for me was Dallas, because I thought they should have taken Cesar Ruiz in the first round. They did. They took CeeDee Lamb. But why I think I was so impressed with what they did is they added a couple of guys in the fourth and fifth round. Tyler Biadasz, who ironically was a center at Wisconsin, he may replace Travis Frederick, who retired from the University of Wisconsin, a very good center for them. So that, to me, like, really played out well for them. And then in the fifth round, they got somebody named Bradley Anae, a good pass rusher who fell because of medical. So if you get on a pass rusher, which they desperately need, because right now, after DeMarcus Lawrence, they have huge question marks. Alden Smith is literally a lottery ticket. So I don't know what else they're going to have there. Randy Gregory is another one that's been suspended. So Anae in the fifth round was great value.
Mike, can you do me a favor? You know, Chris and I went back and forth on this. We'll probably get more into it at some point later in the week. Can you explain to me why the Green Bay Packers decided to trade up into the first round and draft Jordan Love?
Well, I think the reason that they felt like it was the right decision was you have an obligation as the guardian of the franchise to do what you think is in the long-term best interest of the team. What I don't think enough people are talking about is I think they picked the wrong year and the wrong player and the wrong draft capital because of the contract. So specifically, Aaron Rodgers can't go anywhere this year or next year. So Jordan Love, he may be Johnny Unitas. It doesn't matter. Aaron Rodgers is on this team for the next couple of years. So to give up a fourth-round pick and to take a quarterback in the first round, philosophically, I understand it. But Aaron Rodgers is not graduating next year. So I think they were a year or two premature in doing it. And I think when you're a Final Four team and you're one of seven quarterbacks on the planet to win a Super Bowl and you got one of them, I would do everything I could within reason to help that player.
Mike T, I want to ask you about one of your former coworkers, Chris Greer. I think he came into the draft with the most ammunition, 14 picks, ended up making 11. How do you feel like he did with the draft capital that he had coming into this year's draft?
Yeah, I mean, you could understand, let's go right down the line in the first round. Like, obviously, Tua, like that one's been talked about forever. You know, if he's healthy, look, he could have been the first player picked. So, obviously, big question mark there. But, again, I think big picture on that, Chris, we got to remember that they have Ryan Fitzpatrick. Ryan Fitzpatrick, if you had to go play one game today in the AFC East, I'm not so sure he's not the best quarterback. So, I think Tua's going to have the benefit of the time. Austin Jackson is a very athletic potential left tackle. I like him. He's going to take a little time, but in terms of, again, how do we measure tackles now? It's certainly by their athleticism. He has that. And the third one's kind of an intriguing player, a guy named Noah Igboom from Auburn. And he, I think, could play inside in the slot with Byron Jones and Xavier Howard. But what's good about him for the Dolphins is when you think about what they want to do on the back end, according to our metrics at ESPN, the Dolphins played the fourth most amount of man-to-man on the back end. So to the extent that Byron Jones and Noah Igboom fit that, they've added two players that fit their scheme. So anytime you could do that, you know, that's, to me, being productive.
It's, how do you say his name? It's Noah what?
You can look it up.
I think it's Igbenogany.
Because I've heard it so many different ways. I thought you had a new updated pronunciation.
Yeah, I think Chris is probably more right on that than I am.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
It's Igbenogany.
Because I don't know how to say that name. You surprised at all that Henry Ruggs was the first wide receiver off the board?
No, he was my number one guy. He's Tyreek Hill, in my opinion. He scores touchdowns. That's the object of the exercise. I like the other two guys, but I would have taken Ruggs first as well.
Mike T, last one from me. Well, potentially the last one from me. No, you mentioned, I mean, you bring up Ruggs. Is there another, you know, give me one pick, in your opinion, that you like the most? One player, one team, perfect fit. What would it be?
Boy, that's a great question. You know, we touched on Tyler Biadasz just, again, because I think he has a chance to start. I like, you know, Braun going in the third round, I was shocked. I don't know why he fell. He was one of my favorite players in the draft. And look, maybe I'm wrong, but I really think this guy could be Teddy Bruschi. You know, the Saints were able to get him in the third round. This is a guy that could rush the passer, play in space. And I was shocked that Zach Bond from Wisconsin was still there in the third round.
Mr. Teague, put your GM hat back on and walk me through the decision that Howie Roseman made to draft Jalen Hurts in the second round.
I didn't like it, and here's why. If he's playing quarterback, then he is he has a ways to go. His accuracy down the field is a work in progress. So Carson Wentz has played, I think, like 20 snaps in the postseason. So are you saying that Jalen Hurts is the next guy in, or are you saying that you're going to move him around and play a lot of different positions? That one I struggle with. I really struggle with what the Packers did with Love, considering Rodgers' contract, and they gave up a fourth-round pick, and they didn't draft a receiver. Hurts, to me, I don't have a great vision on how they're going to use him. And Wentz's durability, like, you know, at some point you have to say he was hurt in high school, hurt in college, and hurt in the pros, and you're one hit away, and Josh McCown was 47 years old and at ESPN, and, you know, they signed him. And do you feel that Jalen Hurts is ready to go in? And again, guys, Philadelphia should have a really good team. Are they prepared? Is it going to be him or Sudfeld that goes into the game, again, knowing that we're in this really weird offseason?
Mike, last one from me. John Mara says, quote, "We better be a better team." We talked about it a little bit yesterday on this show. What do you think that means? Like, is that record-wise? Is that you have to look like a better team? Is it do you have to win 8 games? What does that mean to you? I mean, you were GM in this league. What would that mean to you?
Yeah, and I was a GM in that town. And I think you kind of know it when you see it. You know, Coach Belichick always talked about that, right? You know, he knows what good football looks like. And I think it's progress. I think it's putting out a really good team that has a chance to win each and every week. And, you know, 8-8 could be that way, or it could be a really, you know, bad 7-9. I think you kind of know it. And I think at the end of the day, is Daniel Jones the guy? Is the team coached well? Are they not turning the ball over? Are the penalties in line? Are they, you know, not being themselves? I think there are certain indices when you watch football, you get a sense of like the trajectory of the team. And obviously they weren't happy where it was last year. So I think you kind of know it. But I do think going back to the start of the conversation, guys, like clearly if this offensive line is better, it just gives you a lot of things. It gives you a chance to win on the road, control the line of scrimmage, and win on third down. And that's something the Giants have been unable to do for the last several years.
Mr. T, last question for me. I mean, you talked about the challenges that coaches and players are facing during this offseason, us being in unprecedented times. For new coach Joe Judge, to you, from your perspective, what's the biggest hurdle that he has to clear? Is it installing his systems, or is it relationship building and turning around the culture?
I think it's both. And I think, as you know, Chris, as a former player, I think you really can't impact players, men, anybody without having equity in the relationship. And you get that by being around them every day. And I think one of the things about sports that most people don't realize is, you know, those relationships happen organically. They can happen, you know, in the weight room or in the cafeteria. And I think it's going to be hard for him to develop authentic relationships with players and try to inspire them and motivate them and lead them. And that's going to take some time. He's also a rookie head coach. So to the extent just learning the ropes of what it's like to be a head coach and make decisions and make cuts and deal with somebody that's disgruntled, that's just part of the learning curve. And I think that's why somebody like Jason Garrett is so important, because Jason Garrett has the scars and he has the years and the wisdom and the experience and the mistakes to say, hey, here's how I handled it. And I don't think those guys ever get enough credit. It's so important when young coaches get their first chance to have a former head coach or two that could just say, hey, here's how I handled it. And it's going to be a lot for him just because, you know, he's cutting his teeth in the biggest market in the world. The Giants are what they are. They're incredibly popular, and I'm sure he'll be a better coach a year from today. And there's so many good things to like about him, but not being around his players is certainly not going to be helpful for him.
Cowboys or Eagles, who's the better football team right now?
Oh, boy. When does Dak Prescott sign his contract?
Your guess is as good as ours.
Yeah, but if you're – Mike T, let me ask you a question. I'm glad you could. I said it was my last question. This is Dave's fault. But if you're Dak Prescott at this point, I mean, don't you just tell him? I mean, time has passed. I'm not signing a long-term deal. I'll play under the tag this year, and if you want to tag me again next year.
Yeah, Rick, I totally agree. I mean, he has unbelievable leverage. It's Kirk Cousins, but he's a better player. He's 26 and he's won 40 games. They have totally strategically screwed it up. I think he has incredible leverage. So I would have probably leaned towards Dallas, but if he doesn't show up until, you know, the Tuesday before opening day, it's hard to say it's not Philadelphia. And again, you know, if you're Mike McCarthy, you are climbing the walls. You are climbing the walls. Because what happens is, and I've been there, and you feel like you're laying down the whole organization, but when you trot out for training camp and it's Cooper Rush under center, everybody knows, every player, every coach knows, this is a colossal waste of time. And what are we doing here? And they're going to look at the front office and say, what are you doing? And I always hated that moment when I felt like I was letting the organization down, not giving them a chance to win. And to the extent that whatever they are, and I don't know, but I'm speculating, if they're off by $1 or $2 million a year, get Dak Prescott signed. The cap's going to be $200 million. You can find $1 million or $2 million someplace else. But you can't look anybody in the eye in that building and say, hey, we could go win a championship with Cooper Rush. And that's going to be a huge problem for McCarthy, because his credibility is going to be at stake too, because he can't sell that to anybody. And that's where, again, I agree with what you're saying, Rick. That's where there's so much. It's extraordinary. That's how much leverage Dak Prescott has.
All right, Mike. Great stuff. We appreciate it. I'm glad that you and I have the DM relationship that we have at this point. At any point, you could get a Starbucks gift card, and we'll talk to you next week.
And next week, I'm going to bring my pronunciation guide, so when Chris asks me a question, I'll be better prepared.
Well, we appreciate that. We'll talk to you next week. Have a good week, buddy.
All right, guys. See you.
All right, thanks. Good stuff. That's Mike Tenenbaum.
I will sit here butchering names, though.
Hey, Ty Balto, I will say this. I mean, if we did a game show where it was like, what's your hidden talent? And they asked me what Chris's hidden talent is, I've never heard anyone pronounce crazy difficult names better than Chris Canning.
Yeah, but there was that one time with Frank Ntilikina. I'm not going to say what I thought his name was called.
What'd you call him?
Yeah, I don't want to go there. It was bad.
Ntilikina?
It was bad, Dave. But Mike T, man, with no Igbenogany, man. Come on,
well,
man.
Honestly,
Igaboom, what?
I thought I've never heard it pronounced like that. Because he just did the draft. I figured he knew exactly the pronunciation. So when he said that, I was like, my God, I want to confirm this, because this is what I'm going to use going forward. You're like, no.
Yeah.
That is not what you're going to use going forward.
And in the center from Wisconsin, I think his last name is pronounced Biotish.
So not a word, Diaz. Yeah. Not a pronunciation.
This is why you need Canty. You think that Bart was correct in Mike T on the broadcast?
No. he says Igaboon. I was like, Igaboon. And then I looked at the name. I'm like, I don't even see how he gets Igaboon out of this.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
That was probably the consensus they came to.
I'm glad you just asked, though, Dave. You didn't even try to fake it and go through the interview. You just said, is that how you pronounce his name?
Well, you know what I actually thought? Because he said it like three times. I was like, okay, I've never heard it pronounced like this. I need clarification. I'm going to ask this, and then the two of you are going to beat me up for asking it, but I didn't care because I wanted clarification, and it turns out in this time you actually came to my defense.
Yeah.
Which is lovely.
It was the right thing to do.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Give me the name again, because I can't say it either.
Igbenogany.
Oh, God, I'm never going to. Igbenogany?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you felt that way about Ngakoue, and you figured out how to pronounce that. Because
he's so good.
Just give it some time. It'll grow on you. I think this kid from Auburn is going to be good too, though. I think he's going
to
be good.
Sure? Are you sure he went to Auburn, or did he go to Clemson? <You
know>? Oh, no. One of them Tiger schools.
and I think we need to clarify this as well as the show. Rick, you're an Xavier McKinney. Are we going Xavier McKinney or Xavier McKinney?
I like, just because they're going to call him. I mean, in the locker room, call him X. I
right.
Whatever you like.
I always thought it was Xavier, and then you had Xavier McDaniel, and you pronounced the X, so I just never knew.
Yeah, I think that's kind of personal preference. I'm going to go Xavier, but you guys can do whatever you'd like.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll be calling his name a lot because he's playing well, Dave.
The interception machine known as Xavier or Xavier McKinney.
Yeah, just think you could have him for 4 years, and then you can just let him walk in free agency.
That's what they do with Alabama safeties.
I know, that's what I figured. I mean, I feel like I've seen this movie.
Yeah, I think we have.
It's the sequel. In these trying times, very important to remember that we do pull together as a community. Small businesses all over going to be feeling the lasting effects of this pandemic. If you are a small business trying to get the word out that you're still serving the community, let us know. Send an email to 987ESPN@gmail.com and let us know your story so we can pass the word along to our community. Some unfortunate news to announce, although hopefully the end is end result is good. Orioles' Trey Mancini, who remember had surgery feels like a couple months ago now at this point, just revealed that he has stage 3 colon cancer, has started chemotherapy, says he will have that for the next 6 months every couple of weeks, has to travel to get chemo all by himself. He can't envision any way that he's going to play in 2020, but the long-term prognosis it seems like is good. So wanted to bring that to everyone's attention. Not a lot of Orioles players we know, and he's, I mean, you could argue, Rick, he could be their best player, and certainly unfortunate in any time, but certainly even more so with what's going on now.
Yeah, it's brutal. I mean, it's brutal. We heard of the surgery. It seemed like everything was okay once he had the surgery. Now to hear that he's got stage 3, especially under these circumstances, I mean, it's terrible. I mean, it's every single day. It's something new.
Yeah, it certainly
just
is.
You got to send thoughts and prayers up to him, man. Good vibes only.
Yep. That's March scary. 12th, he had a malignant tumor removed from his colon, and it felt like that was kind of it, but I guess they found it to be cancerous, and he started therapy. So it's going to be a long journey, but it sounds like the end result hopefully will be good for Trey Mancini. All right, on that note, it's not seamless, certainly, but on that note, let's turn our attention to Nobservations.
Do you need to feel better about your life?
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
And totally redeem yourself!
Let's take a look at Rick's Nobservation.
Welcome back, dum-dum.
All right, here we go, fellas, on this beautiful. We haven't had the weather from Dave Rothenberg lately, but it is a beautiful Tuesday.
Finally. And the weather's been brutal, though.
Ugh. It's been brutal. But we're going to have some nice picnic weather today, so we'll have a nice little picnic after the show. Some good news, since Davey Downer gave us that Trey Mancini news.
Well, should I not have brought it up? I thought it was a timely story that people want to know.
I don't necessarily know if it was appropriate head into our next segment, but hey, we'll make it work. Wasn't seamless, but we can make it work because I got some good news, as we've been doing here on Nobservations. Did you guys see the story of Shaquille O'Neal and what he is doing for the parents of
yes,
Dexter
I
Rentz?
Did.
I did not.
It's a good story.
So Dexter Rentz, 18-year-old kid, he had signed on to play football at Louisville. Unfortunately, he was killed late Saturday evening. He was 18 years old. Shaq saw the news report about Rentz on Sunday, and Shaq, being the good guy that he is, he reached out, got in touch, and he'll pay for all the funeral expenses, including a horse and carriage and a custom-made casket.
That's respect from Shaq.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But this is just like one of many. Like, I mean, I clicked on the story this morning and it kind of led me to other stories about Shaq, some of the stuff that he's done. It's not the first time that he's paid for a funeral, but really awesome story how, you know, where he's from, went into a Best Buy, got to talking to a mom and her kid. Kid was getting an Xbox, got into the whole backstory of, you know, what they were dealing with and everything else. Ends up buying the mom 3 TVs. A TV for every room, bought the kid the Xbox and every Xbox game that was available. Like, so it's not the first time. Like, he does this quite a bit.
That's great. I love stories like that. You ever see the one with Charles Barkley where he, like, befriended this guy? I forget. He used to go to this somewhere down south, and he would go, I don't know, every couple of months. And then he met this guy at the bar, and they became, like, really good friends. And the gentleman eventually passed away, and Barkley flew to the funeral. It's an amazing story. Have you ever read that?
It sounds like it's familiar, but
I don't remember it.
I'll send it to you guys. It's a terrific story.
All right, here's another good story. So the first medical doctor to actually play in the NFL is DuVernay-Tardif. Laurent DuVernay-Tardif. Remember him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Won the Super Bowl against
the Chiefs. For the Chiefs, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly right. So what is he doing now, might you ask? He's actually decided that he wants to help with the coronavirus, so he's actually now back in the hospital. He said his first day back in the hospital was April 24th. He's working in a long-term care facility about an hour outside of Montreal in Canada. So he actually decided to go in and help. He said he was going to do it earlier, but they didn't really know where to put him because he isn't licensed yet to practice, which he's going to get to. But so he is now, and they got some cool pictures of him and his get up. So he's actually now helping.
That's awesome.
During the pandemic. That's awesome. Go from winning the Super Bowl to that. It's great. It's great. Here we go. I'll give you one. We don't have much time, so I'll give you one.
You got time. One. Don't rush yourself.
One quick, did it happen in Florida story. Here we go. I kind of like this story. A woman was arrested for allegedly, what did she allegedly do? This seems like a good idea. She decided that it was going to be a good idea as a police officer was responding to a foot pursuit in the area. So the officer left the car. What is she going to do?
She took the car.
You know what? I'm going to jump in and I'm going to take the patrol car for a spin. So she walks by, finds the keys, jumps in, ends up hitting another police vehicle, and then guess how she gets caught? She gets stuck in traffic.
Oh, my God. She didn't turn the lights on?
No, she got stuck in traffic.
Probably didn't know how to cut the lights on.
Yeah, maybe.
She had 12 prior arrests, was charged with grand larceny, auto, criminal possession of stolen property, and reckless endangerment.
Yeah, that's not going to help stealing a patrol car. That's
Now, here's the question, though. Here's
my buddy
question.
Pete actually stole a police bike one time.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Where's their traffic now?
That's a great question, Dave. I mean, listen, piece it together in your head. That's why did this happen in Florida question.
It can't be, right, Chris?
How do you know? I mean, if anywhere, where would
there
you
traffic?
I think, yeah,
traffic
if people are
going to
be
Florida?
Out and there's going to be traffic, I would probably say it would be one of those states where they've relaxed the restrictions. Ooh. So for that reason, I'm going to go with Florida. But, Rick, I got another question. The bike that Pete stole, was it a motorcycle or was it an actual bike?
No, it was a bike cop. Bicycle. Yeah, bicycle.
And how did that happen?
I know that's Pete being a bad guy, but I don't, you know.
Yeah, I know you have no respect for the bike.
You're on a bicycle.
Yeah, I get it. No, we got busted. We were down by the beach, and Pete thought it was a good idea to light some, light like a little bonfire type situation. And then bike cop just so happens to be rolling by. Comes bombing down the beach, drops his bike, comes running after us, yelling at us.
There's a fine line there. See, if it was a motorcycle police officer, I would say, yeah, that's just a bad guy. Because it's a bike cop, it makes it a good story.
And just to confirm, Pete is now formulating the youth of our country as a teacher, yes?
Yeah, Pete is. Okay. Yeah, Pete's a teacher, good. Yeah. Yeah, Pete's that's giving nice. Back. Okay. Yeah, he comes rolling by. I'm running away, and I see Pete riding by on the bicycle.
That's hilarious. That is hilarious.
Oh, my goodness. All right, so did that woman who stole the police car do that in Florida? Chris, I'm going to say no. I don't see traffic in Florida at this point. I'm going to say no.
Wow. Ray Santiago, Florida.
I'm kind of like in flip a coin mode here. I think I'm going to go Florida, but I'm not feeling good about it.
Wow, Dave Rothenberg on fire. I'm telling you guys, it's coming. It's coming up the coast. That was in New York City.
What?
That was New York City.
Now, I have to ask you this. I've tried to avoid this. Where in New York City did this take place?
That was in Harlem.
So that's in Manhattan. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
It's not coming. It's here.
Police vehicle.
Yep. It's found here. The keys, jumped in the car, smashed another NYPD vehicle, and then got stuck in traffic on the Madison Avenue Bridge.
Savage.
Of course she did.
On the heels of Mike Tannenbaum's beautiful, beautiful pronunciation, mm-hmm. Santi, do you have that sound for me?
Tua Tagovailoa.
He had a couple of doozies this weekend.
Dude, between that and then him doing like the whole fugazi, like, come on, guys, it's the boomy ladder.
Every single time.
Mario, we have to see that.
My God. Tongue went numb.
Or how about the draft next year will be in Las Vegas?
No, it's actually going to be in Cleveland.
Not next year, Vegas.
Yeah.
2 years, Vegas. It was.
He ain't got to worry about getting booed in Cleveland, though. That's going to happen.
Yeah. They just announced when that draft is going to be.
It'll Ruben be Froster.
To Santa Clara?
It's not even a hard name to pronounce. It's no. Foster.
No, he did not have a great draft weekend. He almost fell asleep in that lounge chair one time, I thought.
Well, I love how the outfit kept changing. Like he went with the jacket. And then
it's like he was an award show host, right?
The game is not officiated by robots.
Santi, before we go, just give me Tua's name one more time. I think the end of it's my
Tua favorite. Tua Tagovailoa.
Wow.
There you go, boys. That is today's Nobservations.
All right, a delicious rendition of Nobservations. I emailed the both of you this Charles Barkley story because I promised I would, and I wanted to follow through. So you can, at your leisure today, read that article, and I imagine you'll both have a little bit of time this afternoon. Very nice article.
Thank you for forwarding that along, David.
Yep.
Perfect picnic greeting, Dave. Perfect picnic greeting.
You know what else? Today's a beautiful, because it's very nice out. A perfect day for gardening, I think.
Yeah, that's on the agenda. That's on the agenda.
Mulching, gardening, and anything outside like that.
The grill, Dave. Today is a great day.
Are you going to fire up the grill?
I am going to fire up the grill. I picked up a couple of ribeyes on Saturday. Today would be perfect to throw those on there. A couple of chicken thighs. Sounds like a dinner plan, Dave.
I like it.
Yeah.
That sounds terrific. So what's on the agenda for you today, Rick? I mean, Chris has a barbecue on the horizon. You have some mulching, some gardening, any TV viewing, any Uno playing, any Old Maid? What do you have?
There'll be some Uno. We got a picnic planned. As soon as I'm done here, we're going to go for a picnic. And then we're going to make some necklaces and bracelets, apparently. We're going to do some of that. Yeah, we're doing it, Dave. We're really doing it.
I love it. There will be a time where you're going to miss this.
I'm not complaining, but I love every second of it. It's just, we're starting to run out. We're running slowly but surely. We're running out of activities.
Did you hear the conversation on the K Show yesterday about Monopoly? That Michael loves it. Don, Andrew can't stand it.
Yeah, I'm not good with Monopoly because I'm a pretty sore loser with Monopoly. I tend to act up with Monopoly.
Love Monopoly.
You know, my problem with Monopoly is, and although I love playing it, it doesn't have an end. Like, it's a game.
Yeah, it just kind of fades off, right? Like, eventually someone's like, you know what? I can't win. I'm out.
Yeah, I mean, you've essentially got to quit. You know, it's weird. I don't know. Like, you can start playing it, but you know that, okay, we have to stop the game.
But if you're looking for something to kill time, that's the game.
Oh, it's perfect for now. Absolutely. Yeah. It's perfect
for now.
That
game can take a very long time. All right. So, of course, tomorrow, Field Yates is going to be with us tomorrow during the program, get his analysis of the Patriots and the NFL draft. Coming up today on this very station, I mean, the K Show, Brian Windhorst, 2 o'clock on Bart and Hahn, the K Show with a cavalcade of terrific guests, Joe Judge, 3:30, Bryant Gumbel, 4 o'clock. 5 o'clock, two guests one time, Michael Imperioli and Steve Sciarrapa. So, I mean, Rick, a terrific guest list on the station today.
No, that's loaded, Dave. I mean, that's loaded. There's no reason. I mean, why would you? I mean, you're not going anywhere. You got local meat coming up next. Then you got some K-Show action. It's perfect.
Chris, huge Sopranos fan, right?
Huge Sopranos fan. Now, I don't think it's as good as The Wire, but that's just a personal preference.
I just started The Wire.
Yeah, but I'll be dialed into the K-Show this afternoon.
So Wire better than Sopranos? Really? I love The Sopranos. That was one of the great shows I've ever seen.
I love The Sopranos. I haven't seen The Wire yet. I have not seen The Wire. I hate to say it, but I haven't seen The Wire yet.
You'll get there. You'll get there.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.